red line for Moscow, noting that Russia is watching the issue closely. Ukraine has been locked in a tense tug-of-war with pro-Russian forces ever since the Crimean Peninsula rejoined Russia following the ouster of Ukraine's President Viktor Yanukovych in 2014. The conflict on the country's east has killed more than 4,000 people.
The General Confederation of Lebanese Workers, the country's labor force umbrella, called for a nationwide strike across the country. Several streets in major cities and a number of key highways were blocked. Banks, several large companies, and many shops also remained closed. Head of the General Labor Union stressed in the gathering that all institutions of Lebanon are threatened, as are the citizens of the country.
We need to face this collapse of institutions through social solidarity and cooperation to preserve what is left of Lebanon and the workers of the country. This cannot happen without a salvation government which confirms political stability, paving the way for economic solutions.
The crisis has deeply stressed the budget for subsidies on essential goods. Power cuts have increased in many areas, which are seeing only 2 hours of electricity per day. People are lining up at gas stations for up to 2 hours to get limited liters of petrol in their cars, while supermarkets and pharmacies are running short of supplies.
The General Labor Union in Lebanon has declared that all members, including economic bodies, Organization of Merchants, and even the Association of Banks in Lebanon, back the strike and allow their employees and workers to take part in gatherings and protests. And while this strike is to protest the main dire economic situation in the country, it is also to put pressure on the political factions to form a much-needed cabinet.
Parliament Speaker Nabi Hibiri has declared an initiative to help mediate stalled talks to form a government. The disagreement is mostly prominent between Prime Minister-designate Saad Hariri and President Michel Aoun, who don't see eye to eye on the general framework of a cabinet lineup. Members of the parliament close to the speaker believe this initiative is the last resort.
This initiative is the last opportunity for the Lebanese to see some agreement on a cabinet. All political factions inside Lebanon backed this proposal, and it was also endorsed by regional and international sides, since it provides a plan for a comprehensive solution. Speaker Barry has put forth a practical framework and tactical steps to try to loosen the knot on debated issues, but this requires mutual trust and reaching a common denominator where the collapse will continue and we will all regret it then.
The World Bank has labeled Lebanon's economic crisis as one of the world's worst since the 1850s. Lack of accountability has also been one of the major reasons behind an extended, multifaceted crisis in Lebanon. Maryam Saleh, Beirut.
Jerusalem is closer than ever is the slogan of a symposium held in Yemeni capital Sana'a to discuss the Israel's long-lasting atrocities against the Palestinian nation. The organizers say the recent 11-day war has proved that the third generation of Palestinians is more capable of standing against Israel. They say the resistance has got stronger despite the normalization efforts of some Arab states.
The axis of resistance was able to prove its existence despite all the conspiracies of the closest people. There are Arab countries that are considered close to the Palestinian resistance, but unfortunately, they continue to stab the resistance through normalization with the Zionist entity. And these countries are the ones who seek to weaken and bring down the resistance. Today, the third generation of the Palestinians is capable more than ever of defending Palestine against Israel's aggression.
The gathering also hailed the support of allies for Palestinian cause, including Iran, who they say has always backed the Palestinian nation overtly. The participants said Iran has played a key role in changing the balance of the war between Palestine and the Israeli regime.
Since the establishment of the Islamic Republic of Iran 40 years ago, it has made Palestine its main issue, as Imam Khomeini declared that Iran's independence will not be complete without the liberation of Palestine. The Palestinian cause is at the heart of Iran's political strategy, and despite the conspiracies that Iran has gone through, it still supports the Palestinian resistance and has been a key factor in changing the equation of the Palestinian-Israeli conflict.
The Palestinian cause is also an issue of consideration for several other Islamic states, including Yemen. Last month, Yemen has launched a fundraising campaign to support the Palestinian resistance groups, even though they are going through a tragic humanitarian situation due to the ongoing Saudi war on their country.
People here believe that armed struggle is the only way to stand against aggressors. They say the recent victory proved that the Palestinian nation is on the right path to regain its rights. Abdul Latif Roshali, Sana.
Push back, constrain, and engage. These are the core elements contained in a European Commission policy proposal which has just been presented relating to Russia. The 27-country bloc's foreign policy chief, Josep Borrell, says the EU must be realistic.
And prepare for a further downturn of our relations with Russia, which are right now at the lowest level. And this further downturn is the most likely outlook for the time being.
The new policy proposal suggests the EU must push back against Russia's human rights violations and international law breaches. This mostly relates to Ukraine and Georgia. The EU must constrain attempts by Moscow to undermine EU interests. Here the document talks about cyber attacks. But the bloc should engage with Russia on COVID-19, climate change, travel visas, and efforts to save the JCPOA Iran nuclear deal. Big claims require big evidence, and the EU has never come forward with a shred of evidence, the Kremlin insists. There are many experts who believe the EU is going down the wrong path.
The West has an interest, an institutional self-interest, in aggravating the crisis with Russia, a crisis which need never have started in the first place, but which was aggravated by the way the West supported the most radical elements in Ukraine.
Borrell was asked about the EU's dependency on Russia's energy. He responded, there is no mention of this subject at all in the policy document. The Commission proposal contains a provision for additional sanctions on Russia, but EU leaders are divided over the effectiveness of such measures. They will make their final decisions on the matter during a summit here at the European Council next week. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
After two perilous days and a difficult night, 69-year-old activist Nicholas Georges has returned to ground level after mounting a huge crane overlooking the US Embassy in London. Armed with little more than a Palestinian flag, Georges risked his life in the daredevil stunt to raise awareness of Israeli crimes against the Palestinians.
Every day, day in, day out, demolishing more and more Palestinian homes. The Palestinians have no rights. Even their electricity and their water is taken from them. Israel is the fourth largest military power, nuclear military power in the world. The Palestinians have nothing.
Apart from the obvious risk of falling to his death, the two-day ordeal has been very challenging in other ways too, as explained by fellow activists supporting him from the ground.
Apart from the climb itself, which was huge, he has suffered from the cold at night because he couldn't fit a sleeping bag onto his backpack. So he spent last night very cold, and he sent a few messages saying, I'm really, really cold. Luckily, because he's so high up, the crane actually caught the first morning sun. So he was the first person to actually warm up. But now he's suffering from the heat, because obviously there's no shade.
As supporters cheered Mr. George's successful landing, he was unable to speak directly to us, as any media talks after this action could affect his possible court battle to come.
So there you have it. Nick is back down safe and sound. But the battle will not end here. After a visit to hospital, Nick will likely be brought in for questioning by the police and potentially even charged for some of the conduct over the past couple of days. Then could come a lengthy court battle which Nick will have to fight against as well. But the lessons that can be taken from this is that the activists behind these brave actions know the consequences, but they still do it anyway, meaning that until there is a solution for the oppressed Palestinian people, this type of action will continue to occur, not just in the UK, but worldwide, possibly as well. Robert Carter, London.
Palestinians in the Gaza Strip held demonstrations in several parts of the enclave in response to the return of the controversial flag march in East Jerusalem al-Quds. The protesters said the move is aimed at provoking Palestinians' anger. They burnt Israeli flags and vowed to defend Jerusalem al-Quds with all means.
The Israeli regime is responsible for the consequences of its crimes in Jerusalem al-Quds. It's provoking us by holding this flag march. Palestinian resistance in all parts of Palestine announces its readiness to respond to the violations in Al-Aqsa Mosque. The international community should stop such violations.
The extremist flag march passed through the old city's Damascus Gate and entered the Muslim Quarter. This amid a fragile ceasefire in the Gaza Strip following the recent Israeli aggression that claimed nearly 250 Palestinian lives. The flag march caused Hamas to warn that the tensions in the Gaza Strip will break out again after Israel's 11-day escalation on the enclave.
Our Palestinian people are all united in defending Jerusalem al-Quds and Al-Aqsa Mosque. Our message is clear that we will not allow Israel to impose its plans of stealing our land and holy places. We will sacrifice everything for Palestine, and the resistance is ready to fight back. We do not trust any Israeli ceasefire, and we are committed to it as long as Israel keeps it.
Palestinian resistance in Gaza announced its readiness for any conflict against the Israeli regime in response to the violations against Palestinians in Jerusalem al-Quds.
Any Palestinian would feel angry for what is happening in Jerusalem al-Quds and the Israeli violations of our rights. We are all united in facing this occupation. We are supporting the resistance and we are proud of its achievements in defending us. We will not give up Al-Quds and our holy places, and the Israeli plans there will fail because we are the true owners of the land.
The controversial flag march in Jerusalem Al-Quds risks reigniting tensions with Palestinians, both in the occupied territories and the Gaza Strip. Hamas has warned that the march will trigger a new conflict for defending Al-Quds and Al-Aqsa Mosque. Ruba Shabit, Gaza.
The U.S. State Department's Bureau of Near Eastern Affairs said the U.S. envoy to Yemen has met with the director of USAID to discuss the need for more donors to provide additional humanitarian funding to address the growing crisis in Marib. Experts believe that this step is an attempt by the U.S. to provide new weapons to its tools in Marib, including terrorist groups who protect its agenda in the oil-rich province.
The continued advancement of the Yemeni army toward liberating Marib prompted the United States to use the humanitarian crisis to supply the terrorist groups in Marib with weapons so that the conflict could not be prolonged. U.S. push for peace has no basis in reality, and continued siege on the Yemeni people is the proof.
Observers said the USAID plays a suspicious role wherever it exists, adding that it uses the humanitarian and relief work as a cover-up for its military and intelligence activities.
The U.S. Agency for International Development is an intelligence agency. It shows the humanitarian aspect, but it hides a lot of illegal activities, including supporting terrorist groups with weapons. The United States will not accept peace unless its conditions are met. Washington is the one who leads the war in Yemen and cannot be a peacemaker.
Last year, the Yemeni army found large quantities of weapons carrying the logo of USAID in Al-Bayda and Marib front lines after recapturing areas that were controlled by Daesh and Al-Qaeda.
Yemenis believe that the U.S. is directly involved in the deadly war against their country. They say it is their right to liberate their lands from any foreign existence, as well as terrorist groups who serve the interests of the U.S. and Yemen. Abdul Latif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
Morning.
Morning, sir.
Half a kilo of halim, please.
Kitty, good morning.
Number one, hands up. Number two, hands on the waist.
Hi, good morning.
Hi, good morning.
Get ready for jogging to warm up.
Hello, good morning.
Hello, good morning.
One loaf of well-baked bread, please.
In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, who allowed none to witness when He created the heavens and the earth, and who took no helper when He authored the spirits. He has no associate in divinity and no support in unity. Tongues fall silent before the limits of describing Him. Intellects fail before the core of knowing Him. Terrors fall low in awe of Him. Faces are humbled in fear of Him. And everything mighty yields to His mightiness. So to Thee belongs praise again and again, well measured, continually, and methodically. And may His blessings be upon His messenger endlessly, and His salutation everlastingly, eternally. O Allah, make the beginning of this day of mine righteousness, its middle prosperity, and its end success. I seek refuge in Thee from a day whose beginning is fright, and whose middle is anxiety, and whose end is pain. O Allah, I pray forgiveness from Thee for every vow I have vowed, and every promise I have promised, and every pledge I have pledged, then failed to keep for Thee. I ask Thee concerning the complaints of Thy servants against me. If there is a servant from among Thy servants, of a handmaid from among thy handmaids, who has against me a complaint, because I have wronged him in respect to himself, his reputation, his property, his wife or his child, or because evil words I have spoken about him in his absence, an imposition upon him through inclination, caprice, scorn, zeal, false show, bigotry, whether he be absent or present, alive or dead, such that my hand has fallen short and my capacity has been too narrow to make restitution to him or to annul my obligation to him, I ask Thee, O He who owns all objects of need which are granted by His will and hastened to His desire, that Thou blessest Muhammad and the household of Muhammad, peace be upon them, and makes the one I have wronged satisfied with me in the manner that thou willst, and givest me mercy from thee. Forgiveness decreases thee not, and giving injuries thee not. O most merciful of the merciful, O Allah, give me on every Monday two favors from thee: the facility to obey thee at its beginning, and the favor of thy forgiveness at its end. O he who is Allah, and none other than whom grants forgiveness for sins.
The debate.
Hello and welcome to another edition of The Debate. Thank you for joining us. Now, as you know, Sayyid Ibrahim Raisi has been elected as president in a landslide. His supporters gathered in the capital, Tehran, to celebrate his victory just hours after the official announcement. In this edition of The Debate, we will discuss what the future holds for the president-elect and his administration. Now, to discuss that further, we're joined by Mr. Masoud Shajare, who's joining us from London, head of the Islamic Human Rights Commission, and also manager of Canadian Defenders for Human Rights, Firas Al-Najim, who is joining us from Ottawa. Now, let's begin our discussion with Mr. Masoud Shajare. Thank you very much, sir, for joining us. Now, if you could please tell us what you think is the significance of Friday's election.
The significance is the fact that so many people went out despite many odds, despite the fact that Corona is creating havoc around the world, and particularly in Iran. And indeed, the sort of 8 years of Rouhani's presidency, which made many disillusioned because his philosophy, was saying that the situation of Iran will change once sort of West will come back to GCPOA and indeed will accept the agreement on the nuclear treaty and indeed will stop the sanctions. All during his presidency, that was the message which was coming out, that we are going to make a difference because we could do a deal with the West and West will respect us and therefore economy will improve. And that was a failure, total failure. And as a matter of fact, people felt that the solution that was being put forward were not realistic, and indeed they became disillusioned. Really after that 8 years, I think a lot of people were disillusioned. They didn't want to vote for vote, or indeed they didn't want to vote for the same policies or same ideology of those candidates who were standing against Mr. Raisi. And it was predicted from the beginning, before the Supreme Council will make any decision on who can or cannot run for presidency, it was all the polls were showing that something with 35% to 40%, there will be people who will come to the ballot box. And so I think that was the reason, these were the reasons. But having said that, despite everything which was thrown by all these sort of channels from London, from United States, you know, financed by the Saudis, financed by United States, financed by everyone around the world to put pressure and say, don't go and vote. People in Iran did exactly opposite that, and they went, and the election was extremely respectable, and the winning of Mr. Raisi was very extremely respectable vis-a-vis the numbers of vote he got. And I think now the West has to accept the fact that Iran has got a different style and different philosophy for moving forward in relationship to the West. And indeed, even people in Iran are not expecting a change. And that change is going to happen. And that change is what the nation needs.
You pointed to a very important issue. So let's bring in Mr. Firas al-Najim to discuss that even further. Mr. al-Najim, Iran's leader Ayatollah Khamenei said in a statement that Iranian people are the true winners of the election. What message do you think that he is trying to convey? Let's not forget that, as Mr. Shajari pointed out, the Saudis and, of course, media outlets from the West capitalized a lot and made a lot of investments to try and discourage Iranian people from taking part in the election.
I mean, Sayyid Ali Khamenei, his message was clear that the people's turnout, the people that, you know, broke the barriers and pushed through all these pressures and, you know, came to choose the destiny and the future of their nation and where it's going, and also the region as well, because, you know, Iran is a key player in the region as well, like supporting the resistance, the Palestinians, the Iraqis, whoever is as a neighbor. You know, Iran is always harbored and came to, you know, help and secure these countries around the region. And, you know, this has to do with the future of also the economy of Iran. And I think the big turnout, while, you know, this COVID is playing a bad role, like obviously it's a very dangerous virus that's spreading and people are dying and so on. So people taking that precaution and also wearing their mask and all that and going out there. And, you know, you saw people from different religions, Christians, Muslims, you know, different sects of Islam, Sunni, so on. They all went out and elected and, you know, contributed to their nation and to the future of the nation. And I think they really, honestly, at this point, they chose the wisest leader that was, you know, from all the candidates. I mean, he's got a lot of, you know, good background. He's an incredible person. And he's a man of law. So he's going to know how to deal with international law in a more wise way than the Rouhani presidency and his government, his administration. And, you know, Iran is in a better position now as well. You know, they went through so many hardships, you know, this inflation, these prices, this pressure from the West, from the media defaming things, you know, and trying to paint the wrong picture. And, you know, a lot of governments or regimes in the world said that they don't recognize these elections, and they said that these are not legitimate and so on. But the people's turnout really showed a powerful strength and legitimacy to this government, and legitimacy to this leadership, and legitimacy to what the new administration is going to put forward. And this administration right now, it's a new administration, a new face, and then we also have a new administration of the illegitimate Zionist regime. So I think this is a very big change for the region, for the world. And let's hope, you know, for the best, you know, administration right now that, you know, could help the world.
Thank you very much. Mr. Shajari, the U.S. and its Western allies always try to delegitimize Iran's election, despite the fact that it is among a handful of countries observing the democratic process in the region. Why so much hostility towards a system that the U.S. considers itself an advocate of?
Well, you know, you're absolutely right. I mean, if you go back from the beginning of the revolution the sort of implementation of the Islamic Republic and the referendum, which was overwhelmingly supported by masses, and it was amazing the number of people who actually voted for the creation of Islamic Republic of Iran. And then, you know, there has been elections after election up to 84-89% of people partaking, and they dismiss all those, you know, all those sort of were dismissed. And now, because of obvious reasons we discussed, the 48.8%, which is very normal within the Western world as a sort of number of people taking part, is being used spent to undermine them. They have always undermined, and it's not just in Iran they undermine the election. They undermine the election in Venezuela, in Palestine, and you know anywhere in the world where they are not dominant power, they are not colonial power, they don't actually rule. They undermine the elections, they undermine the government, they undermine the legitimacy. You know, they did it in Cuba, they do it over and over. And it's not just in the region of Middle East, it actually goes far beyond that. The reality is that they decide that who is friend and who isn't. And you know, let's not forget that their states, which are the loving sort of supporters of, like Bahrain, like Saudi Arabia, who are, you know, they don't even understand the meaning of democracy. They actually, every time the word of democracy is mentioned, they start shibboleth. And, you know, it really is, and they are absolute dictatorship against their own people. They are, in Bahrain, they're killing anyone who's standing up for democracy. They're in jail, they're abused. You know, and in Saudi Arabia, not only they don't even understand the concept of democracy, but you know they are committing war crimes in Yemen, and they are being supported for all this. Look at the state of Israel. The state of Israel is an apartheid. It's apartheid in every sense of the word. Even the number plate, license plate on the cars for Jews is one type, and for non-Jews is another. They could go in certain areas, others cannot go in certain areas. In this day and age, this sort of level of apartheid, the fact that Israeli policies and the government has made it clear legislation that this is a state for Jews, and Jews have got first and last power over others. This sort of level of apartheid and this level of abuses is being held up as the only democracy in the Middle East. It really is ridiculous, these accusations. And, you know, we hear accusations that Iran is getting involved in trying to influence the elections around the world. What? It's actually everywhere around the world, United States, Britain, and their allies and everyone else, by creating these satellite and sort of channels, hundreds of them beaming into Iran, trying to influence, telling people not to vote. It is getting involved directly in trying to influence the election in Iran, and they have done so forever. I mean, let's not forget the time of Dr. Mossadegh, you know, how they actually did a coup to remove a legitimate elected member in Iran. Look, democracy is just a ploy. It's just a tool that they use to against whoever they feel that is not accepting their authority. And their authority is a colonial authority, is a new type of colonialism. And as long as you're part of that and you accept their power, they will let you to get away with murder.
That is very true. Now, also, let's not forget that Israel has reacted to Mr. Raisi's election by saying that he is committed to rapidly advancing military nuclear program. Mr. Al-Najim, why do you think, what is behind Israel's fear-mongering and negative propaganda? Why is he bringing this up?
Yes, well, it's obvious that they're always lying and fabricating things to rise the tensions and to have America and all the different Western governments to back them up and also install fear in the Western, installed puppet regimes such as the GCC, the regimes that Brother Masoud was bringing up about Saudi and Bahrain and all that, so they can, you know, give more of their oil and their money to the, you know, Americans, to the Zionists. They can get closer to normalization and can always be fearful of Iran. Obviously, Iran has a fatwa by Sayyid Khamenei that, you know, nuclear weapons are forbidden. And this is, you know, this is a principled stand that will continue this way. And, you know, this is the type of, you know, things that they always fabricate. You know, and the Zionist regime obviously does fear the Iranian government and its influence and its, obviously, its supporters and allies in the region. And they've seen recently from the battle between Gaza and the Zionist regime that it's not a joke anymore, you know what I mean? And they're well-equipped and they're well-supported by the Iranians. Even all the Gaza, you know, leadership there, like Hamas and different ones like Islamic Jihad, have all said that we thank, you know, above all allies, Iran, because they've supported us through all these wars. You know, there's a lot of different, you know, people that are lying and deceiving, such as the MKO. They're known as, their name is the Mujahideen Khalq, Munafiqeen Khalq. They also, you know, are being supported by a lot of the West. You know, the Shah's son, Reza Pahlavi, that's living in the States. I mean, all these people are all losing grip, and they have lost their influence, and they have lost their supporters as well. You know what I mean? All they do is attack people. Like, we've seen here in protests or different events that they have no language of dialogue. They have no language of you know, there's nothing that you can, no diplomacy. They just attack, like they did that in England. We've seen some videos of them attacking the election areas where people were going to elect. Unfortunately, in Canada, there was no, you know, no way for the Iranians to take part in these elections. Unfortunately, the Canadian government is falling, you know, to the Zionist plots and to the Zionist influence and bullying, you know, because the Iranians should have a right that live in Canada to elect, you know, and give their voice towards their motherland and their nation, you know, and it's unfortunate that this is the way. But at the end of the day, you know, I even heard from the Iranian, you know, government officials and so on, that the West, because of their severe sanctions, because also Biden failed with his promises to pull the sanctions off Iran, that people now voted the conservatives what they call the hardliners, you know, because people are, you know, under pressure and so on, and they want to change. So really, the West failed, you know, because obviously they would rather have a reformist, liberal kind of government, as they call it, and you know, that would be easier for them to negotiate. But now the conservatives, they don't negotiate in a way where they're going to get deceived. They're not going to negotiate in a way where, you know, they will, you know, it will fail. Especially now that they have learned the lesson of what happened with Rouhani, where they worked so hard on this nuclear negotiation, and then a next administration comes in the U.S. and just, you know, withdraws from the whole thing and dismisses everything and does not respect any agreement, respect their own allies, such as the other nations that were involved, other governments such as Germany and UK and so on. So this shows clearly that, you know, who's on the right track and who's failing and who's winning, okay, and who's moving forward.
Mr. Al-Najm and Mr. Shajari, actually there's one more question that I need to ask you. It's quite important, so if you could please keep it short, because we have less than 2 minutes' time. The fact that the transition of power in Iran takes place in a calm and peaceful manner. We saw Mr. Rouhani and Mr. Raisi's rivals congratulating him. They were first in line to congratulate him. How important is this? Very quickly, Mr. Shajari and then Mr. Al-Najm.
Extremely important. It actually shows, despite the fact that there is a difference of opinion, and indeed, this is why people sort of voted in such a large number for Mr. Raisi, because they feel that his solution for Iran is going to be more practical and more doable. But nevertheless, they all have pulled together. I mean, you know, in contrast to what happens in the United States and what we saw, which was disgraceful. So I think this is sort of shows that people in Iran are united for solutions, and it doesn't matter what sort of philosophical solution or the change of tactics in finding solutions for Iran is put forward. They believe in the democracy and democratic right of choosing different ways to move forward.
Thank you very much. Mr. Al-Najm.
Yes, I mean, the turmoil that we've seen in 2009 with the Ahmadinejad elections and the problems, now we have got to a new stage where people are unified under the leadership. They are listening more to Sayyid Ali Khamenei's wisdom. They're actually seeing that being implemented. And they're seeing that Sayyid Ali Khamenei really cares about the whole nation and all Iranians. And Iranians are obviously diverse. You know, you have Muslims, you have Christians, you have Jews, you have Baluchis, you have Azaris, you have Arabs, you have Persians, you have Turkomanis, you have all kinds of different Iranians, you know, living inside Iran, and they're all unified now, and they all did not have any problems and disputes, and they didn't let protests come into place, and they didn't let the Western, media try to disrupt the nation. So we're really at a good stage, and this shows a very strong unity between them, all the Iranians. And hopefully they will stand behind their leadership and their administration. And looking forward, hopefully we're going to see a lot of success and good results for the whole region and the world.
Thank you very much, Manager of the Canadian Defenders for Human Rights, Firas Al-Najim, joining us from Ottawa, and also Head of the Islamic Human Rights Commission, Masoud Chajare, live from London. Thank you very much to both of you gentlemen, and thanks for following this edition of The Debate.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Amnesty International, in a recently released report, said the Biden administration has shamefully continued the Trump administration's policy of misusing the Title 42 public health authority to block and expel people at the border, recklessly endangering lives. In this regard, we have prepared an article for you written by Kenny Stansil Ryder. This article is published under the heading, "There is no excuse. Amnesty slams Biden over skyrocketing ICE detentions and more than 400,000 expulsions." Stay tuned for more. The Biden administration's treatment of refugees, asylum seekers, and immigrants not only falls short of expectations, but is in urgent need of course correction, particularly its growing reliance on mass detention and widespread denial of access to people requesting protection at the U.S. southern border. Amnesty International USA argues in a new report released recently. President Joe Biden assumed office pledging a fair and humane immigration system, placing racial justice and human rights at the heart of his vision, begins Amnesty's report. Needs improvement, a progress report on the Biden administration record on making the United States a safe refuge. His promised agenda was a stark contrast to that of former President Donald Trump's administration, which used xenophobia to justify punitive and cruel policies that dismantled access to protection for many people. Nevertheless, the Biden administration has yet to act boldly to undo the Trump administration's harm and restore humanity in how the U.S. treats refugees, asylum seekers, and immigrants, says the report. Just days after Vice President Kamala Harris discouraged would-be Central American migrants attempting to escape poverty, violence, and extreme weather, factors that are inseparable from decades of U.S. intervention in the region, including the promotion of neoliberal policies and genocidal right-wing dictatorships from fleeing to the U.S. Researchers at Amnesty analyzed the Biden administration's approach to six components of the immigration system: immigration detention, access to asylum at the border, unaccompanied children, climate displacement, refugee protection, and temporary protected status. Most alarmingly, the administration needs to immediately reverse its direction on immigration detention, where it is rapidly going backwards, and fully restore access to asylum at the U.S. southern border, where it continues to maintain the Trump administration's policy of blocking and expelling people at the border. Failure to act and course correct is a betrayal to people seeking safety. Emphasizing that the drastic rise in the number of detained people reflects how the Department of Homeland Security, DHS, is reverting back to a blanket use of detention for people arriving at the border, the report notes that shortly after President Biden took office, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, ICE, reported detaining 13,860 people on February 5th. As of June 18th, the number of people ICE reported detaining has skyrocketed 82% to 25,238. His proposed budget for fiscal year 2022 funds detention space for 32,500 beds. Returning to Obama administration levels of detention is not progress, it is history repeating itself. In addition, the report points out the Biden administration has shamefully continued the Trump administration's policy of misusing the Title 42 Public Health Authority to block and expel people at the border recklessly, endangering lives. There is no public health rationale to treat immigrants and asylum seekers differently, and it is causing irreparable harm to them, the authors wrote. The welcoming of unaccompanied children at the border while continuing the expulsion of families and individuals has created family separation. The report states, between March 2020 and May 2021, the government summarily expelled nearly 875,000 people, particularly affecting black immigrants and asylum seekers. The Biden administration has expelled over 400,000 of those people. This misuse of Title 42 continues despite objections by CDC officials and against the recommendations of public health experts. All of this was entirely unnecessary and violates U.S. obligations to uphold the right to seek asylum and not forcibly return individuals to a place where they would be at risk of serious human rights harm. According to Amnesty, recent statements suggest the Biden administration will continue to rely on mass detention for people arriving at a border, particularly when it ceases to
misapply the Title 42 public health quarantine to block access to safely at the border. The report notes the Biden administration must act much faster to move children from these emergency intake sites and close them down altogether. Emergency care is not suitable for the long term. It is a stopgap measure for discrete short periods. In addition, the report notes the Biden administration continues to misuse the Trafficking Victims Protection Reauthorization Act to immediately return almost all unaccompanied Mexican children to Mexico. CBP is failing to adequately consider the protection needs of Mexican children by forcibly returning them and belaying the administration's commitment to welcome children seeking safety. The Human Rights Organization also calls on the Biden administration to more robustly grant humanitarian protection through Temporary Protected Status, TPS, to protect people already in the U.S. from forced return to their countries of origin because of ongoing armed conflict, extraordinary and temporary conditions, and environmental disasters. Nearly half a year in, the administration has still not delivered on change that has not only been promised, but is of the utmost urgency. Dennis Bell, researcher for refugee and migrant rights at Amnesty International USA, said in a statement, "There is no excuse that can get the United States government out of its human rights obligations. While systematic reform that respects human rights means explicitly addressing the racism underlying the U.S. immigration system," authors of the report wrote, "current policies that perpetuate deterrence, detention, and deportation do the opposite and must be eliminated to end the systematic harms against black and brown communities." For each of the six immigration policy arenas examined in the report, Amnesty made specific recommendations. Some of the group's proposed solutions include immediately stop expelling individuals and families under Title 42, end the use of arbitrary mass detention, and incorporate a presumption of liberty in custody determinations, with asylum seekers and immigrants allowed to live in the community, supported by sponsors and community-based programs operated by nonprofits to assist individuals in navigating the immigration process. Release people held in immigration detention through an affirmative file review process with a presumption of liberty, prioritizing people who are most at risk of harm in custody, including families and children, HIV-plus individuals, pregnant women, and those at heightened risk of contracting COVID-19. Phase out IC contracts with private prison companies and county jails. End family detention and close all three family detention centers. Continue to urgently address conditions at emergency intake sites and raise the standard of care to meet children's best interest, while implementing changes to safely release them faster from such sites, and communicating a transparent plan to stop their use altogether and ensure that unaccompanied Mexican children are given fair and meaningful access to asylum, as all unaccompanied children and people seeking safety should be and not turned back, with summary and inadequate considerations of their protection needs.
Radio. Radio. Coming up is the news. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the